Good morning, everyone. Welcome. We have a great panel. It's 12 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock on this Wednesday morning, the 11th of March. Hopefully you are you're up and at 'em. You're ready to take on the day. I know we are. We have a great group assembled. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. When you think about it, two huge subjects to talk about. We'll get to whatever, get as much to as we can this morning. Obviously, the election results from last night and coronavirus, and of course, there's a lot of crossover between the two. So we will begin in just a second. Let me introduce everybody first. Rosemary Armeo is here. We are always thrilled when she is here. Investigative journalist, UAlbany journalism professor. How are you?
Good.
Wonderful to have you here. Chris Churchill joins us as well. He is a Times Union columnist. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Nice to have you. Dean of College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University of Albany. The busiest man in Albany right now, I would assume, right?
One of them, although I think I'm going to change the name of the college to the College of Full Employment Opportunity, given everything that's going on in the world.
Bob Griffin, well, good to have you here. And we also have another SUNY professor with us, Terry Gibson, New Paltz Communications Professor and former New York State Senator. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning.
And then Professor Rowe. It's Alan Chartok. Good morning.
Hey.
How are you?
Well, you know, every day is a challenge, right, for all of us. And we just put one foot in front of the other and keep on trekking.
Indeed. And here we are. We'll just keep going. We welcome you, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Okay, let's talk about what happened last night. And, you know, it's interesting because I think we have an idea of what is happening, and then you actually have the events happen, and they're a little bit different than you would have expected. Bernie Sanders was given the state of North Dakota this morning, won the state of North Dakota. The state of Washington is still up in the air in a race that I think is between somewhere in the neighborhood of under 5,000 votes or something. Meanwhile, Joe Biden wins Idaho, Michigan, Mississippi, and Missouri. Not only wins, but wins by sizable margins, 49% to 43% in Idaho and Michigan, 53% to 36%, a huge win in Michigan, a state that he lost, that Bernie Sanders won, I should say, in 4 years ago. Mississippi, Joe Biden had 81% of the vote, and in Missouri, 60% of the vote. Brings up a lot of questions. One is, what does this mean for, yes, the nomination, but also what does it mean for the future of the Sanders campaign? Mr. Biden was addressing supporters in Philadelphia yesterday. Both candidates canceled their rallies in Ohio because of concern over the coronavirus. So they were only talking to their supporters. Interestingly, Bernie Sanders had said he would have he would talk. He canceled that last night. And Mr. Biden then called for unity with Mr. Sanders, saying, together we will defeat Donald Trump. So probably the biggest question, I think, anyway, out of what happened yesterday is, what is the future of Bernie Sanders' campaign?
Well, Bernie Sanders is absolutely essential to Joe Biden. Because if Sanders people walk, if they don't turn out, if Trump isn't seen as the kind of threat that he is to so many of the rest of us, you know, the president may well prevail. And so this is going to be very important that Biden, does everything in his power to bring in the Sanders people.
So does he keep going, though?
There is no future to his campaign, and I hope he gets out the sooner the better. And as for his young supporters, he could not even get them out to vote for him, much less to vote for Joe Biden. And I think Biden needs to fashion a campaign that that looks at all the past, at the low levels of voting by young people, and build his coalition elsewhere.
You know, from the Department of, I hate to say I told you so, on this panel several times I've talked about how historically the kids don't come out and vote.
I was with you every time. Yeah. We were battling the other optimists on the panel.
Right, and there was always somebody to say, well, in my class,
yes,
they're going to
yes,
vote.
Yes, they're very excited.
I also think it's significant that in the Michigan vote showed that a lot of the support of Bernie Sanders, the young people, yes, ideology, but all those middle class and workers and all that, was an anti-Hillary vote. Hillary's not in the race.
Absolutely
and
true.
And his support has collapsed.
That's part of it. It's also a coronavirus vote. I think it's hard for Sanders. It's hard to argue for a lot of change when people are feeling nervous and a little bit anxious.
True.
But to go back to the young voter thing, Biden does have to get... I mean, you can talk about whether or not they turn out, but he does have to do better among younger voters. And when you're talking younger, people sometimes think you're talking only about college kids. You're talking about voters under 50. If this was only
45, they say, under 45.
If you make it only voters under 45, Sanders would win in a landslide.
Yeah, how about under 56? I mean, throw us a bone.
Voters under 56.
I'm with you, Bob. Yeah, I'm with you, Bob.
Young kids younger than 56. No, but I mean, he's not going to win in the – there are a lot of Biden weaknesses in the fall, but among them is the fact that he can't win with baby boomers alone, which
but
is
to
the
Alan's,
way he's winning the primary.
You know, to Alan's point of what you were saying, and I know you took it, Rosemary, to be the kids, but look, the people who write this show, I mean, you know, the people who are the Bernie supporters, are they going to come willingly?
And what does Biden have to do
and
to
what,
get them?
And that's right. And
well, that's
what
up to Biden. That's up to Biden.
Well, no.
Biden well, yeah, but the question is, what does he do? You know, what does he do?
I think he needs... Number one, I think he needs to treat those voters with respect. I mean,
he started that last night.
He started earlier in the campaign, he said he had no empathy for younger voters. Things like that aren't going to help. There's talk about him bringing on, you know, J.P. Diamond as his Treasury Secretary. That's not going to help. He's going to have to – I think he should adopt – coalition campaigns adopt a little bit of the losing
others.
Campaign
yeah.
into it. They suck it all up into it.
I agree.
And if he doesn't do that, I think he's going to have a lot of trouble. There is a lot of frustration on the progressive left right now.
But why wouldn't
he
do it?
But it's not just Sanders supporters.
But he seems like he's trying to do that and is willing to do that, don't you think?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't hear anything.
But this is also part of the responsibility, I think, that Sanders has, that if he doesn't actively get out and support a Biden ticket, and I agree with you, Rosemary, I think he needs to do it early, that you might as well just give it back to Trump. And I understand the frustration. I don't think you're wrong, and I do think Biden, you know, I think Alan is also right. I think I don't think Biden can win without that big coalition. But Sanders can't sit on the sidelines and just throw his hands up.
He didn't do that last time for someone that he had a lot more personal animosity toward, right? Like he and Biden are actually seem to be pretty amicable,
and that's what I hope. And I hope people see that. Though.
You know, we've argued this in the past, but Bernie was flying all over the country in 2016 giving rallies, but he can't. He's not a Pied Piper. It's not like his whatever he does, people are just going to follow him. I mean, Biden has to do things that bring people online. And by the way, it's not just Sanders this time. It's also Elizabeth Warren, who has a long history of battles with Biden, we'll see how much she gets on board.
I see this very differently. Chris, I see it very differently. I see a candidate who's been pounding away with exactly the same message since before 2016. This is his second time around. It didn't work the first time. It clearly isn't working now. I don't think he can blame the virus for what happened last night. I think that it really is in Sanders' court to take responsibility for his campaign as now and figure out how he can do the best with what he has to work with. And I think he really needs to come to the table and meet with Biden and say, how can we work together? I want to help you beat Trump.
I would push back on the idea that it isn't working, because if you look at the polls, the exit polls, there's very strong support for Medicare for All. There's very strong support for all the economic proposals that Sanders has put forward.
Then why didn't they vote for it?
Well, that's the question.
Support and vote are two different things.
Well, that's true. Right. And I think that's really frustrating people on the progressive side of things, is that they're looking at all these exit polls showing that they're winning on all the issues, but people are going with what they view as electability. instead of what they what's in their hearts.
Yeah, it is what it is. I mean,
it is what it is.
It's all about timing. You know, this
Sanders,
is the wrong time. This is
one at a time. Winning. I can't understand who's talking.
I just think that the you know that it's all about timing, and it's clearly now showing that the people are just not quite comfortable with the message that Sanders is offering, and maybe they were more comfortable with it last time around. But with everything going on, there seems to be a real appeal for calm and. Perseverance through
stability.
Thank you. That's the word I was looking for.
Right, and I think that's what I was saying earlier about the coronavirus. I mean, that hurts Sanders quite a bit.
Yeah, hold on for that one. I got a different question for you, Chris. Though, is this sort of a reverse Hillary effect, though? That it's Sanders' personality that is now in question. Rather than, I mean, we keep talking about policy, but it could be just as simple as that people are tired of screaming politicians.
Biden is also a yelling politician, too. I mean, he keeps
into fights with his voters. He's done that twice now recently. I had no problem with him correcting somebody
who was telling a lie. I mean, I thought that was a brilliant moment.
Well, he's also called voters fat and things like that. I mean, he's had some bad moments with voters.
But
my only point is, if they want somebody who doesn't yell, that Biden probably wouldn't be the logical choice.
Yeah, Trump would be. Come on. Yeah. If you don't want to yell, you're out of this contest, man.
I don't agree with you, Chris, at all. I think we have Trump on one side. We have a very stable person in Joe Biden. And I don't think he's the kind of guy who goes, you know, in this country, I want to
I didn't say he wasn't stable. I was just saying that if yelling alone was the judgment call.
Well, he doesn't yell a lot.
He yells at the debates. He's a yeller too, but that's fine.
Biden's a yeller. I don't see that.
I think it's up to Biden right now to start. He has to keep projecting this calm and experienced background, but he has to start working on policies. And the thing that I think can hurt him the most, two of them, healthcare and a climate. And on healthcare, as many people support Obama souped up as support Medicare for All. So he's got a winner there, and he needs to push that. And the other thing is climate. There are many young people, my sons included, who see him as nothing. He's got a nothing program. But Biden is a listener and an organizer. The only thing he said he has to follow up on back in the Paris Accord day one, and you put Al Gore, people of that ilk, together to say this is what we're going to do.
But, you know, if I could bridge between the two of you, though, real quick, I'm sorry, Alan, I interrupted you.
No, that's okay.
Real quick, talking to my son last night, you know, one of the things that's clear to me, though, is that my generation is not picking up the angst of the younger generation about climate change.
True.
And even someone who is relatively well-read, I mean, I was really surprised at how vehement he was about the climate and how angry he is the fact that we're leaving the world a much worse place than when we got it.
Right.
The other piece of this, that healthcare piece, this virus is going to play a big role in this election.
Yeah.
Sorry about
that.
I just wanted to talk about for a second the American left, the left, as I like to describe it. It's there. There's no question about it. It was there when I was a kid. It's there now, but it has never gotten to anywhere near a majority in this country, and I think that Bernie Sanders played his hand well because the people who are on the what I would call the left were there with him. My friend Pete Seeger and others would certainly have been there. But it's just not enough to get him over that line. It won't be.
Trump is blaming Elizabeth Warren. His latest tweet was that if Pocahontas had dropped out a week early, that those votes would have gone to Bernie. And instead, she collaborated with the establishment to get rid of him, which is nuts because the votes seem to have gone to Biden.
Because from day one, he knew Biden was a real problem. He didn't know what to do about it. So what he does is he does the Hunter Biden routine and an investigation and the rest, which, by the way, he did too early because now everybody's saying, oh, that, you know, he's going to come back to that. I think he thinks he can really be beaten by Biden.
David Axelrod last night on CNN said the first phone call that Joe Biden should make this morning is not to Bernie Sanders, it's to AOC.
Absolutely, I agree.
Yeah.
She's the one, if she switches her support to Biden now, then she brings some of the young votes who follow her with her. She can give him legitimacy on climate.
She's not going to do that, but
she might.
She's not going. Not at this point.
I mean, even on Instagram, last night, she was like, "It's a tough night. I don't know." You know, I mean, she seemed.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of the Bernie people are pretty discouraged right now, but they're not going to give up before the Sunday debate. There's just, I mean, that no matter what that debate is a big test for Joe Biden. Can he get through a debate? You know, having to speak for 50 minutes straight, that sort of thing.
Is it only an hour?
Well, I mean, you know, half.
Oh, I see.
Going back
okay.
and forth.
Right.
I mean, just two candidates on the stage is a very different dynamic.
Yes, it is.
You know, he's in every debate so far, he's seemed like the kid in right field who doesn't want the ball to come his way. You know, well, now he's like he's the pitcher or the catcher. He's going to have to speak a lot. And it's also, I think, for Sanders, it's one last chance to get his message out.
How many more chances does he need? I don't think the debate's going to make any difference at all. Everyone knows Sanders' message. It's not going to change. You can look at any debate he's been in for the last 10 years. It's going to be the same thing. So either you like it or you don't. And Biden is going to say the same thing, too. Everyone understands these two characters
now. But Biden has to show that he's capable of talking and not messing
up. I don't know that he does. I don't know that he does.
Well, you might be right. May be nothing that can change the dynamic at this point.
I think people understand who Joe is at
this point. But they're not going to quit before that debate.
I mean, Joe didn't enter politics yesterday. People are very familiar with Joe Biden. He goes back way, way, way back. And people understand who he is. And
stability.
At this point, people are beginning to say, look, I got this stable, sort of almost going a little bit back to the past, definitely is taking us a little bit backwards.
Restoration.
Or I've got this person who wants to take these big risks and these big changes, and people are making those choices, and they're clearly wanting stability.
There's talk of the DNC canceling this debate on Sunday, and if they do that, that'll be the first sign that they're going to have a lot of trouble getting younger voters and progressive voters on board. They cannot do
that.
Yeah,
that would be a mistake.
I think that would be a huge mistake.
They were going to do it without an audience.
They are going to do that, but there's now, after yesterday's result, there's been some talk about that.
But I do think that they need to sit both these candidates down and say, listen, it's okay to have an exchange of ideas, but do not damage each other, because this is anything that's done right now in an inter-party damage will just feed Trump and his machine.
Right now, if we're looking at the polls, I think Biden is 15 to 18% ahead in Florida. What happens at a debate? What can Bernie Sanders do to change that? I mean, that seems to be.
I think the only thing that could. I mean, Florida is a lost cause, but Ohio and states like that are not.
Are you
lost
talking about
causes.
The election or? Never mind.
All sorts of different ways.
Sorry, everybody in Florida.
It was a general statement.
That was Terry Gibson who made that comment.
Excuse me. I'm just sitting here minding my own business.
I mean, there was a reason 2 weeks ago that we all thought Biden was done, and that's because he has looked very, very shaky. And he could look very, very shaky again.
I agree with you, except that he wasn't the front runner before. I mean, even in the first, I mean, now
he was the front runner, and then he became not the front runner because he was so terrible.
But his last 2 weeks have been really good because he has wind in his sails.
Right.
I mean, he's
and he also hasn't had the debate, and he's, you know, they've been limiting his exposure, and
Bernie's got the advantage in this coming up debate. He's a far better debater. The issues are going to be right up his alley. We're going to be talking about a stimulus package that does
about
not appear
seconds.
To be helping workers, and about the epidemic. That's he needs to make. I hope he does a statesman thing, makes a great speech, and then reaches out and they start working together.
All right. We're
gonna, administration.
We have much more to talk about. We have your letters, too. We'll welcome them at panel@wamc.org, and we'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion. We have Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Bob Griffin. I'll get everybody's name right. Chris Churchill and Rosemary Armeo, we welcome your comments. panel@wamc.org. I said Terry Gibson, didn't I?
No, maybe not.
I thought I did.
Oh, I don't know. Well, I'm the quiet sound
ladies and
type,
gentlemen,
really.
Terry Gibson
yes,
is here.
You.
Yay! The forgotten
yes.
panelist.
The one that gets blamed for everything.
Yes, yes. Yeah. That's right. Well, yeah.
I'll never get an angry email. Well, that was Terry.
Yeah,
glad you know that role.
So we should note the stock market is open. The Dow is down 620 as of right now, and the futures are low. Another rough start for stocks as the coronavirus news gets worse, and so we will continue. We'll talk about that as well this morning. I do want to get to this idea, however, that Bob and I were talking about that. I think we mentioned it during the break that exit polling showed in almost, I think, six contests, they asked the question of which of the two candidates, Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders, would you want handling the coronavirus issue? And overwhelmingly, by in some case anywhere from like 68% to 82% of the people responded Joe Biden.
Right. You know, I'm not a Sanders supporter by any means, and I don't get that because I'd be okay with either of them. As long as it isn't Trump or Pence, I would be fine.
I think it's about health care, though. Right?
I think it's about stability.
I think it's about association with Obama, too, just that period of peace that people felt.
A name we haven't mentioned this morning, but sooner or later, he's going to come out and do something. That's for sure. Obama,
after there's an official candidate.
But, you know, nothing reminds us of how important the presidency is like a crisis. And it's all fun and games until you're staring down the barrel of a pandemic and you're really questioning whether the government is doing what it should do or it's playing politics. And I really think that, you know, I think you're both right. I think, Alan, you're right that it's this idea of stability. It's this idea that Biden can work with Republicans and that we can actually focus government not in a partisan way, but as a to do what it should do. And the fact that Biden will let the experts in the CDC do what they're supposed to do and not put these really weird Pence-Trump lenses on mm-hmm. and spin on everything.
Mm-hmm. Which is why it was so bad that the president decided, now that Pence was doing better than he thought he would and getting all kinds of credit, that he would put his big puss in front of the you know, the American people, and thereby ruin what was going very well for the administration, I thought.
That's one thing I said in my column on Sunday about Biden was that—
You write a column? It's a very good column.
I'm sorry, I left out the word successful columnist.
Is that Biden does convey empathy, you know, and people know his personal history, his personal tragedies, and he's very good at connecting with people who are suffering or who are frightened, which isn't something you can easily say. Well, you certainly can't say it about Trump, and it's less easy to say about Sanders. I do think, though, that in Sunday's debate, if Sanders is smart, he will hammer home the Medicare for All issue on the coronavirus, especially because it really does illustrate his message more than almost anything else. The idea that, you know, he says in his commercials that we're all in this together, and when you look at a pandemic, it really makes clear how much we really are. When somebody doesn't have health care, it does affect everybody. Yeah.
I just want to these are just some of the headlines in regards to coronavirus, and there are many of them, and I'm probably leaving some out, but here we go. So the U.S. caseload has now surpassed 1,000 in this country, we are also learning this morning that the health minister in Britain says she is infected with the coronavirus. There is still much debate over testing in this country, and a lot of people saying that the delays in testing set us back a great deal by 2 or 3 weeks. And I believe, and Bob, you may know this number better because I'm doing it off the top of my head, but somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 people tested yesterday.
That sounds right.
Whereas in other countries, tens of thousands of people could be tested.
They have drive-in testing in places like Australia. You just go and put your little finger in the machine.
And getting results back. Washington State preparing to restrict gatherings of over 250 people. We mentioned that there would be no audience for the debate on Sunday in Phoenix, Arizona. And meanwhile, we're seeing the effect on the stock market. And also, even though the ship docked 2 days ago, there's still poor people that are still trying to get off that ship in Oakland, California.
I really feel for them.
And Joe, you want a stunning number. Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, just came out within the last hour and said that the coronavirus is likely to infect up to 70% of the German population. that I'm not talking lethality. I'm just talking 70% of the population being sick is a huge number.
And of course, the other biggest, well, at least locally, but even nationally, because it's such a large zone. But the fact that New York has created a containment zone in New Rochelle, another huge story.
Yeah, I heard this morning, I think incorrectly, on NPR, one of the broadcasts, it was not ours, said that the mayor had invited in the National Guard. Actually, it was Cuomo. And, you know, that wasn't right.
Yeah. No.
In other words, what wasn't right is that NPR got it wrong.
Oh. Yeah, and Alan, can I jump in for a second? I really am incredibly impressed with how the governor is handling this.
Yep.
I think he has struck the right message. I think he's in front of us just enough to keep us informed, but not so much that he's in the way. And I look at the difference between what I'm seeing with the federal government and the administrations, and it's a stark contrast. And you know, back to your comment, Chris. This is what I think voters are starting to look at, and they're saying that, you know, we want more from our president during a crisis than what we're getting.
You know, it was just 5 days ago that the White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow went before microphones in the White House and said that we have the virus contained and that Americans should go to work.
Yeah, it was contained. Following,
5 days ago. 5 days ago.
The boldness and the falsity.
Following his orders from you-know-who.
Yes. Yeah, I mean it's just completely unacceptable.
I don't know that Larry Kudlow's remarks yesterday were much different.
I was shocked that we spent as much time they spent as much time talking about the economy as they did about what they were dealing with the virus, and everything it seems with this administration comes back to the stock market and to the dollar, and government and society and what we are is more than that, and they don't get it. They don't get it at all.
Well, I'm astounded by the lack of understanding of what this is doing to our economy. Forget about the stock market. The economy, you're not going to be able to go to a Broadway show. All of the places in the Berkshires that have more than 250 people assembled. Businesses are basically closing down. Parking garages in New York City are empty. This is really a major crisis, and I don't think we're fully understanding how when the market bounces back as it has on a couple of occasions. I don't get it because things are so terrible.
It's so true, Alan. And the thing I don't understand about it is that you hear these press conferences that the White House is giving with Vice President Pence, usually at the forefront, with all of the health officials, and they certainly make it sound that they give an idea of what's happening and answer a lot of questions about testing and so forth, but they're obviously trying to keep a positive tone, and then anything else you hear. And again, if you want to say it's the news media ramping up, but how do you come out of a press conference and then say, oh, they've shut down New Rochelle. Oh, by the way, Italy is shut off completely, and not think, oh, this is really serious.
Yeah. In Massachusetts is in a state of emergency.
New York is in a state of emergency.
California, Washington. I don't know if anybody picked up yesterday, but there was a really important difference in the CDC message yesterday during that press conference. What Fauci said was, it's coming to your neighborhood, prepare. And that runs really contrary to what the administration has been saying, but that is really an important point. I mean, what he said is that he didn't sugarcoat it. He says, this is spreading. It will most likely impact your neighborhood. And that, again, is very different than what we heard from, hey, then no problems, don't worry about it.
And contrast that with the president of the United States, who said just a few weeks ago, we're not talking about months and months ago,
2 weeks,
this thing is a Democratic hoax. And then now he wants to, you know, do all kinds of remedies. But how can you do remedies on something that's a hoax?
Well,
he still has a rally planned, right? He announced.
The Catholic, Catholics for Catholics for Trump.
They're calling it a campaign event, not a rally now, weirdly. Yeah. But
is it more than 50 people?
You know, his management style has always been to find someone to blame for everything that goes wrong, and he's continuing to do that now. Even now, wow. He's pointing a finger at anybody or any organization he can find to show that it's their fault, not his.
We have lots of letters. We'll go to those, and then we'll take a break, right? Let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll do the letters, and then we'll have a good chunk of time for them. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. Panel at WAMC.org to get your thoughts in. Alan, let's go to the letters.
Okay, Joe. Claire says, Sanders. The press proclaimed Sanders the frontrunner for the nomination after he won two caucuses in an election in a lily-white state located next to his. Now Sanders is blaming his recent losses to Biden on the establishment and the media. African Americans, who have been stalwarts of the Democratic Party for decades, rejected Sanders' message. Young people, attracted by promise of free tuition and student loan forgiveness, supposedly support him. Sanders doesn't need to look for conspiracies. He just needs to look at who came out to vote. He also needs to drop out. And that's from Claire in Clifton Park.
Well, you know, I agree, but I think the media, I went back and looked at campaign coverage, like in the major newspapers. I like to do it on TV. But Biden said from the beginning, I'm going to do really bad until South Carolina, and then I'm going to turn it around, which, as it turns out, is exactly what he did.
He can read
polls,
of course.
The press duly reported that, but we, because I did it too, we all did it here, said, nah, you know, after Nevada, after Iowa, wow, he did so bad. After New Hampshire, he's never going to get back in. And so we seemed like it's a surprise. Was it really? Was that not? What do you think, Chris?
I don't think it was a surprise. I mean, it's only because we've never seen it done before.
Done this way.
Yeah. But I think it's just a weird, and I don't know if there wasn't the coronavirus, if there wasn't various things, if it would have gone the same way. It was just, we'll never know. But to come back to that letter, the one thing that does get under my skin a little bit is this notion that young voters are with Sanders only because of free college and debt relief. Debt relief is a big issue for a lot of people, but most of those people have graduated from college, including me, who's still paying back student
really?
Debt.
Wow.
But they're with him for, like you said earlier, climate change.
Yeah.
Things that it's not all about what they're going to get from the government. A lot of it is what they want for the world. It's more altruistic than necessarily looking for free money. And that's the way that it's always framed. I'm telling you, that's dangerous. If that's the message the Democrats are going to lay on young voters are just going to throw up their hands and walk away.
But are the young people really with Sanders?
Well,
is that really an accurate
are,
statement? Do we see evidence that that's really happening?
Well, yes.
In terms of them showing up to vote for him?
The ones who are voting vote overwhelmingly for Sanders.
But
and
it's not
true.
Enough. It's not. There's a lot more young people that aren't voting.
Right. Well, that's always the case, though. But you do see long lines on college campuses. No, I mean, you know, the young voters who are showing, he's
so
not
much
drawing.
For idealism.
I'm not seeing any evidence that the majority of young people are with Sanders. I mean, I'd like to see that, but I'm not seeing it.
The majority of young people who are voting are for Sanders.
But
yes.
but it's not a majority.
Right.
It's not a significant majority to make a difference.
It's a relatively small portion of the electorate.
Anyway, Beau writes us a letter
and
says, Biden's strategy for youth vote. Good morning. Here's a simple strategy for Biden to garner youth support without going, quote, too far left and alienating more centrist support. And it utilizes traditional market dynamics. And this is all in capital letters now, folks. Make a powerful campaign promise to allow the refinancing of federal student loans to explanation marks. Here we are with the mortgage rates, the lowest in history, et cetera, and everybody's refinancing everything, anything
right.
they can.
Refinance those loans. That's really a good point. Excellent point.
With these unprecedented low interest rates, but federal student loans cannot be. I think a hashtag allow refinance student loans would be a great place to start. It could cut some folks' payment obligation in half. And that's from Bo.
Trump should do that if he were smart while he's doing a stimulus package. That would do it because college debt is not just a problem of the young. It ruins the entire economy. Young people cannot afford cars or houses or all the big ticket items that make our economy run.
There are senior citizens paying back student debt.
You got it. Yeah, they're paying back their kids.
Or having their Social Security withheld because they can't pay their...
Exactly.
Except, you know, my fear, though, is that given where the economy, I think, is potentially heading with this current crisis... And given that the spending of this administration, particularly on military spending, and given the fact that we've given rich and corporations a massive tax break, the deficit is something that we all need to pay attention to. This is going to be a huge problem for us to deal with.
But you're going to get a lot of pushback from Democrats who say, well, we have things we want to spend this money on that are actually useful. And then when Republicans are in the White House, nobody cares about the deficit. And as soon as we come back in, everyone cares about the deficit.
And Chris, I think that may be right. But at the same time, there's only so much money to go around. And the Trump administration has run this deficit up to historic levels. And at some point in time, you got to pay the piper.
Anyway, Mike. Yes. Anyway, Mike from Post and Kill writes us a note that he's concerned about Biden. I'm concerned about a presidential candidate who points his finger at a working man and challenges people to go outside. Should I be? No.
No.
Well, you should be concerned about a president who does that. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I have a feeling.
There's reason to be concerned about Biden. I'm not sure if that's the reason. I do think he is a relatively weak presidential candidate. I think he, you know, a sack of potatoes could beat Trump and certain on the right day of the week.
But not Bernie Sanders.
I think Bernie Sanders could have beat him, too. I really do. The polls show that Bernie was beating him in all the swing states and a lot of other places.
But was.
Was, yeah. Right. Again, well, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen. They may still be. I haven't seen recent ones. But
I love your show, says Vince of Kinderhook. I love your show. Why don't they have a mixed ticket, Biden-Sanders or Sanders-Biden? That would solve the problem on many levels. Thanks, Vince of Kinderhook.
So the reason I don't like that idea is that I don't want to see two septuagenarians at the top of the ticket. I would actually like to see somebody.
On the age of the coronavirus?
Right. I really would like
well,
to see.
There goes the ticket.
I would like to see
that's
somebody.
That's why the vice presidential candidates are going to be very
it's gotta be a woman.
Important.
It's got to be a woman.
Critically
it
important.
It has to be a woman.
Yeah.
Going back to Chris's comments earlier, I think you're right. I think they do need to gin up as much of the base as they can, including the young. I think the Democrats are going to have to do additional outreach to the Latino community, and they're going to need to bring some fire on this in order to get people enthused and out to vote.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I would worry about with Biden is the enthusiasm issue. I just don't know that people will be that enthusiastic. You know, he's talking about being a bridge president. Well, that in some ways that's appealing after 4 years of Trump, but that doesn't really give you something to really sink your teeth.
Well,
you
can be enthusiastic. Enthusiasm comes in two ways. One is pro-Trump, the other is pro-Biden, the other is anti-Trump.
Right.
And that is there.
And that's
hurt Bernie this
we
time.
And we know how angry Democrats are and many independents are about Trump.
Right.
That's where the enthusiasm comes. Get
them
out of here.
I think you need more than that, though. I think you got to give – that's something, and that's real, but you also have to give people something to vote for – instead of just something, just simply voting against.
Okay,
Trump.
Well, no, they want stability. That's what they're voting for.
They want Trump out, and I think that's the sole reason for many of them. I'm not an ardent Biden supporter. I will vote for him because I think he has the best chance against Trump. I think there's a lot of people like me.
You will, but there's a difference between people who are consistent voters and people who are inconsistent voters. I think.
Yeah, they don't vote at all. I don't think they're in the equation, and that the both teams, Trump and whoever, I think Biden, but whoever the Democrat is, need to develop strategies as they have.
Well, Trump has one,
ever,
which is to throw red meat to the base. That's what he's been doing.
I think Democrats
all along.
To win, they need to draw in the inconsistent voters.
Which is why I thought that Biden was well within his rights yesterday to tell the guy you're full of something. I liked it.
About
I thought
that.
It was good. It showed
I mean,
a little
he's
character.
Talking about stability and bringing back dignity to the office, and then he pulls that. No, I understand
that
he's upset, but.
But at the same time, Rosemary, that was a setup. I mean, the guy was reading a scripted message that was patently false. That's not what Biden has ever said. He knew it. He was looking for his 15 minutes of gotcha fame. And I was okay with him putting his place because otherwise, you know, you're darned if you do and you're darned if you don't. If he doesn't react to it and has that deer in the headlights look, then everybody goes, oh, look, you see, he can't react.
And Rosemary, you of all people, I mean, let's face it.
I'm not running because I have a personality that is not dignified and respectful.
Is that why you're not running?
And I want, I mean, Barack Obama.
We never
Barack
say that to
Obama,
your face, Rosemary.
Yeah, I know you do.
Right.
See you out in the hall later, you guys.
But, I didn't think that interaction was so bad, but he has had other interactions.
I believe you're
players.
Arguing this
yes.
point.
It's what the Shartok twins would have done.
It's just inconsistent.
I think it's insignificant.
I'm sorry. There's a better way to deal with it. Like, this is a setup. What's that script you're reading? I mean, he could have called them out with intellect, not with bad words. It's schoolyard behavior.
Well,
boys
anyway,
like it.
Sam writes, fractured Democratic Party. Exit poll after exit poll showed the Democratic Party is fractured along generational lines. 44 and younger go for Bernie, 45 and up go for Biden. But the generational gap masks the larger socioeconomic stratification between rich and poor. Low socioeconomic status leads people to be sicker and to die earlier. So poor Americans have far less chance of shaping political life. Poverty is voter suppression, so poor Americans have little political clout. And that's Sam from Beacon. All right.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that gets lost a little bit. There are voters. People say, well, he'll be a bridge president 4 years, and then we'll go on to, well, then you'll get your progressive. Okay, well, there are people who feel like they can't wait 4 years. Like, they need health care. They need health care. No, they want.
Oh, we'll have a woman someday, just not this one.
Well, that's true,
too. It's the same thing.
Well, it's not the same thing as not having health care, though, or living and feeling like, okay, this I have some hope because this guy is going to give me or help provide something that
that's
I don't
a
have.
Message.
But,
you
know, Rosemary. But the idea that electing Joe Biden means that we can't achieve any of our progressive goals is just is false. The president has limited powers. Congress has an enormous amount of power. And if the public, if the people, if Sanders supporters want these progressive things, then it's up to them to continue to lobby their elected officials, to lobby the president and put pressure.
True.
And there's no reason to think that we can't get many of these things.
Anyway, Kathy says of Biden, I'm okay with someone who rambles but tells the truth, someone who believes in experience, education, relationships, science, intelligence, community, and balance. Sure, he blurts. But he errs in telling the truth too much. Sure, he hugs too much. Okay, isn't that better than hating? Go, Joe, says Kathy.
Well, there's a long history of Joe not telling the truth, though, too. I mean, there are quite a few stories that he has told over the years that turned out not to be true, including getting arrested, meeting Nelson Mandela, being shot at, you know, in Iraq or Baghdad or wherever he was. I mean,
are you confusing Hillary and Joe?
No, Joe did that too. You know, the plagiarism scandal. There's plenty in Joe's background that he's carrying into this campaign. That's why I do think he's not as strong a candidate as people are making
him
out.
Well, I don't agree. Anyway,
one more, and then we'll
Wes in Albany says, I'm 29 years old and, like many millennials, would rather have Bernie over Biden. Of course, I would vote for Biden over Trump any day. My concern is that if Biden doesn't make a significant effort to address the issues that younger folks care about, we could all see 2016 all over again. Big fan of the show. Thanks, guys. And that's Wes from Albany.
Thank you, Wes. We're going to take a break. We will come back and continue. We have another 45 minutes or so. We will do that right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Bob Griffin. Sorry, I got those three. Chris Churchill, Rosemary Mayo, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org.
Well, we were fighting during the break.
Yeah,
because Rosemary, all of a sudden, the most combative of us, was saying that Biden ought to be ashamed of himself, basically, for taking the bait and telling the guy, step outside. On the contrary, I think we need a little bit more of this from Biden. You can't criticize him both ways and say he doesn't do it, he doesn't show any personality. And when he does, and correctly so, good for him.
I have not criticized him as not having no personality. I think he has a lot of empathy, and sometimes that has failed him. He did not have empathy for women during the Clarence Thomas hearings. I will forever hold that against him. But the man listens, he learns, and he is capable enough to handle a disruptor and a heckler in a more creative way than he did. I'm not saying back down, but you don't yell, swear words, and threaten violence.
Well, see, I disagree with that, but... but it's okay. I get it. You're playing the correct part here. Leslie says, Bernie, good morning. Each day that Bernie remains in the race, he helps Trump and is leading to an I told you so moment instead of uniting his supporters to defeat Trump, shades of 2016. I think the big difference between this and 2016 is Hillary ain't here.
Yeah. Well, and also, the people who normally came out for Bernie Sanders were not there. I mean, you look at Michigan, Joe Biden won every single solitary county and every district in Michigan. Didn't even come close. And I think that's the big difference, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, Sanders won the white working class in 2016 in a lot of places.
2016, you say?
In 2016, yeah. And Biden's winning it now. And You know, Sanders moved to the left on a lot of issues, and that he moved to the left on immigration, he moved to the left on guns, and he may have lost some support in that group on those issues.
Yep. And Lily says, endorsements. I can't help but wonder whether these primary results would have looked like had Buttigieg, Beto, Klobuchar, and Warren thrown some of the support behind Bernie. As we have said many times on this panel, if Schmiff.
Well, also, why would you have thrown your support behind? I mean, you would have thrown your support behind the person who won the primaries, and Bernie didn't do that.
Well, no, but the point that they announced their support for Biden, you know, Sanders had won New Hampshire, arguably Iowa. He had won in Nevada. They threw their support to Biden based on one primary.
Well, yes, but it was a more
Okay, but still, you know,
it was more diverse.
But you could also say, well, what if Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders had teamed up more earlier? How would that have shaken things up?
I could also say, if I won the $1 billion lottery, where would I be right now? So I mean,
where would that be?
Exactly.
I would have an island.
And Mark says Biden's running mate. Biden's choice of running mate will go a long way to determining whether Bernie supporters will get behind the ticket. Stacey Abrams might be a good pick. Who does the panel think Biden should pick as a running mate?
I like Harris.
Me too.
I like Harris or Stacey Abrams. I could see either one. It has to be a woman of color. I really believe that.
I think that's true too. But Stacey Abrams, she's awfully inexperienced for somebody to be running with a 78-year-old. She's never been anything more than a state senator or whatever the.
Hey, don't knock it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm not, I wouldn't pick you for the ticket either, Harry.
I'm not so sure that the VP candidate is going to do much to get young people out to vote.
No,
if Bernie can't get them out to vote, I'm not sure that that will matter. But I do think it's incredibly important to getting the base Democrats out to vote.
You see, my only caution, though, Terry, is that. This is going to be a really different election, and I actually think that the vice president debate could play a much larger role than historically it has. I mean, I don't think we can make assumptions about where this election is going to go.
Why is that? Just because of the age of the two candidates?
Absolutely, and I think that the differences, the stark differences in the two leading candidates, and people are going to want to see what the difference is in the vice presidents, because
that's a very intellectual utterance. Nevertheless,
we don't accept those here.
We on this panel have. I've argued against people on this panel that, in fact, the kids weren't going to come out and vote in large numbers, which Bernie was depending on. And sure enough, I was right. And I'm going to tell you something else about vice presidential debates. They can be important. They can be enjoyable. But up to now, they have never meant an awful lot.
Sometimes they do, though. I think Trump used Pence to kind of shore up his conservative, the conservatives who are wavering on him. And I think Biden could do something similar with progressives who are wavering on him or are unsure about his commitment to their side of things. They can make differences on the margins. Right?
Want to step outside?
Sure. Let's do some push-ups. So.
but also, Alan, some of Pence's policies are so extreme. That and it gets masked because I mean he's just working for somebody who's bat crazy, but when you really listen to a lot of what he believes, it's
spooky. It's really anti-woman,
well, he prays over it. Yeah. He says he prays over it.
Oh, does he? Well, that
well,
makes you, a big
you'll remember
then.
That when it came to changing his mind on the needle exchange in Indiana.
Yeah. After perpetrating the largest spread of HIV in the country at that time.
It was terrible. And then he said, but I prayed over it and I came to the right decision.
When you talk about VP debates, as the letter writer brought up, I always think about Biden's debate performance against Sarah Palin, which was not that great, if you remember that. He didn't come out being as victorious as we thought he would.
You know,
Biden is a weak candidate. I keep telling you guys that.
I've looked at that debate a lot, the one with Palin, and I actually think he did a good job on that.
Good,
because at the time,
great.
Yeah, at the time, no woman had ever been in a debate like that for that level, and you cannot attack a woman as we saw with Trump. You come off as a bully.
What about
and
Geraldine
mean?
Ferraro, isn't she in the
There weren't debates then. Was there a debate with her? If there was, I don't remember.
I think there was one.
Who would that have been? That would have been...
That's a good
anyway,
question.
Anyway, moving
okay,
right along.
Yeah. My point, though, is that I think that he was acting then, unlike now, not trying to be a bully and saying bad words and pushing his weight around. He tried to just trap her in how silly she was, and I think she proved that.
Why Biden should ask Sanders to be a VP. Dear panel, you folks make my day each day, but I am a Daniel Shays Democrat and can't listen to Rosemary without comment anymore. Rosemary, you were wrong about HC in 2016 when the obvious answer was for her to embrace Sanders, especially after the media hyping the safe candidate issue twice now. If we lose to Trumpism this fall, it will be due to the media's failure to embrace the new left, Don.
So I hate letters that poke at Rosemary because then during the break she takes it out on us. So
that's
I just
right.
need to
and
note
so
that for all of our listeners. The four of us are sitting here going, oh boy.
She gives us the Biden treatment.
This is just a bite me letter. I have nothing to say.
Bite me. I like it. It will be due to the media's failure to embrace the new
left.
Yeah,
it's my fault you got Trump in office. That's it. Sure. Right.
I just want to jump in to clarify. We said Geraldine Ferraro debated Vice President George H.W. Bush in 1984.
Okay, I have to go back and find that at YouTube.
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
I went to that
debate.
1984 was like yesterday.
We will do
it?
Some study.
Yeah. It was amazing.
And H.W., of course, had some of what Biden has, right? I mean, people liked him. People thought he was a gentle soul.
Yes.
No?
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree with that.
Justin, what it is, if Bernie had a full-throated endorsement of the media and the establishment like Biden did, this wouldn't be a problem. It's a consistent tearing down of a candidate. The black electorate is stuck in identity politics. With Obama's policies staying in place, they don't know how terrible of a candidate Biden is. AOC will never ditch Bernie.
Boy, there's a lot packed into that letter.
Mm-hmm. I agree that the Sanders gets unusually negative press coverage, and I'm a member of the media, so I, you know,
are you allowed to do that?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, going against the tribe.
But
it's not like Biden had a great endorsement. The media rips apart anybody who's in power or ascending.
No, and it's you and I were talking once before about editorial boards.
Yeah,
and how interesting it is that so few of them endorsed either Biden or Sanders.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I mean, the two candidates who have proven to have strong working class appeal did not do very well with the editorial writers of America.
True.
In all honesty, I think AOC's got to come around. I think in order to be successful and achieve what should be everyone's number one goal of changing the presidency and working down ticket to put some sanity back in Congress, that they're going to have to come together.
But AOC has a particular problem. She got elected by being the outsider, by saying, I reject all of this stuff. She can't afford to look like somebody, who just is going to do what everybody else does, come on over when it becomes more convenient.
I just have a little bit of a problem with the framing of this, that it's all on AOC or it's all on Sanders. I mean, Biden has to reach out,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, absolutely.
And by reaching out, he has to show that he's interested in some of these issues and not just dismissive of them.
But there's a couple pieces here, though. And Ellen, one of the things where I think AOC, the minute that she took that rich, fat package that congressional people get, the lifetime insurances and all of the benefits,
healthcare,
she became an insider, okay? So you can keep running against it, and a lot of people in Congress run against it, but at the same time, they're not giving up, all of the perks of the position.
So say you.
I was disappointed she didn't pick Elizabeth Warren. I mean, who has many of the same and similar policies. Chris said she copied them from Sanders, but at any rate, very similar, and
Heritage,
was a woman.
Well, but AOC was elected on a platform that was supported by the Sanders network, so that made a lot of sense to me.
Well, no, Rosemary makes a great deal of sense here. Warren might be an appropriate vice presidential candidate.
Yes.
Who? Wasn't that put the Senate majority?
Warren. Well, yeah. But with Warren, you'd have another 70. You have three people in their 70s.
And you got another problem. You have a Republican
governor
of Massachusetts.
Yeah.
But that could be worked out. In other words, you could say to the governor,
well,
you can't
change your age.
What'd you say?
You can't change your age.
You can't change the 70.
Well, women live a lot longer than men, right?
Oh, yeah, she's got another 20 years in her.
Oh, I'm sure.
Biden is not going to convince Charlie Baker to put a Democrat in that seat. I mean, you know, he is a Republican. Right.
No, he's a Republican. That's what he is.
Well, he's still
this guy. I've watched him, and I have great respect for him.
Yeah.
But his one major area of problematicism is his ability to stay away from Trump as a concept.
Biden said very clearly that we need Elizabeth Warren working in the Senate. He's not going to pick her as a VP.
Well, I would agree. Yeah. You're probably right.
Nor should he, really.
It can't be two white faces.
Next letter. Massachusetts.
Next letter. Thank you, Joe. Amy, young voter turnout. Keep in mind that a lot of, quote, young voters may not be showing up at the primaries because they don't belong to a party and therefore can't vote until the general election. So arguing that they're not turning out could be very misleading. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, I live in the state of Massachusetts. You do not have to belong to
a
party.
That's not the case in a lot of states.
No.
But Bernie knew that, and he was the one who predicted he'd turn out the youth vote.
Well, he's talking a lot about the general election when he says that. But if you look at college campuses, there are long – I mean, my old school, the University of Texas, there were kids waiting for 3 and 4 hours to vote. So,
is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous.
Right. And college campuses are also a place where you have a lot of voter registration drives. And the Sanders campaign did an enormous amount to get more people registered. So I think college students are registered.
And then they register, and then they're not there to.
That's another point. They register.
I mean, the
they give them a Coca-Cola. I'm kidding, of course, but they give them an incentive to register, and then you don't show up at the polls.
Yeah, except
but they are showing up at those. I mean, there are long lines at a lot of places where young voters vote.
And let's pull that thread for a second. You know, there has been a concerted effort to make it harder for young people to vote. I mean, you can look at a number of black people and
people of color.
So you know, we keep throwing it at the millennials when you know you start to look at what is being purposely done to make it hard to vote.
Do you think? Yeah. Okay. So that's Amy. So anyway, now we heard from Kathy in Mayfield, New York. Does anyone know exactly why we do not have enough test kits, masks, and protective gear for first-line workers? Is it just gross incompetence, or is it because 2 years ago Trump shut down the office that was responsible for rapid responses to outbreaks such as the virus, that he cut the budgets of agencies that pertain, and then two, CDC says the average of 25,000 Americans age 6 and up die from regular flu annually. Also, I read that the CDC says that the average of 47% of people in the U.S. received the flu shot. What percent of the 25,000 that died did receive the flu shot?
Too many questions.
Or did not receive the flu shot? Well, these are all good questions.
They're all good questions.
So can I hit a couple of them?
Sure.
And I think you need to decouple some of these issues. Trump did come in and pretty much wiped out our pandemic response capabilities to a huge extent. Look at the Department of Homeland Security. They get rid of their Office of Health Affairs, so they don't even have it anymore. The issue of supplies is really interesting, and I think it gets back to a couple of different issues. Is that, you know, it's a just-in-time economy, and because of profits, hospitals don't stock an awful lot of supplies, and there's the issue of reimbursement. This is all sort of coming home to roost. All of these policies are coming home to roost and showing an inherent weakness in the preparedness of our systems, but equally important, how thin the margin is in our medical community.
Mm-hmm. Linda says, testing for coronavirus. I just checked with my local doctor and no testing for coronavirus is available at this time. This is a disgrace and dangerous. The head of CDC must resign. Our national government has failed all of us. Linda from Rensselaer. Thank you.
I don't know if they should resign because I'm not sure who would take their place. You know, I'd be more concerned about who's going to replace them.
He's at loose ends these days.
But I do agree. You know, the leadership at the high levels of government has really
not done a good job.
Disappointed us. Yeah.
Jim says, coronavirus. Good morning to all. Colleges around here are banning fans at games and changing classes to online. Harvard is even telling students to live off campus. Yet high schools around here still have athletic events with lots of fans, as have basketball teams like Siena. Why is there such inconsistency when CDC is calling for social distancing?
give it a week, right?
Yeah, I was about to say, I think in a lot of places that the policies are catching up with the reality of what's going on in the communities. I mean, it does take time because we're talking about such a change in how we operate as a people.
And Melissa says, coronavirus and the economy. I live in the Five Colleges area of Massachusetts. And right now, three of the Big Five have made the move to go remote teaching. The colleges are the second or third largest employers in this area, and our small businesses are heavily reliant on student population. I have friends who own production companies, and commencement is how they make a big bulk of their cash. I don't think that people grasp the severity of the ripple effect. I agree with you, Melissa.
Yep. I do as well, and I really am worried about wage earners because if there is no work and they're not getting paid, that's going to make the economic crisis deepen very, very quickly.
What could the government do to help them? We agree it isn't payroll tax because if you're not working, that doesn't even affect you. What could it do?
I mean, I think that it, in other times we'd be looking at a whole stimulus package that would be designed to put people back on their feet and respond to when sort of that we start to see a light at the end of the tunnel as far as this is concerned. But I think we need to start to think about a package similar to the one that they pound on Obama, saying that whole recovery. Yeah. His Recovery Act saved us from that recession, and it was his Recovery Act that gave us the roots of the economy that Trump has been riding. Sorry for the rant, but you can't claim credit for the good economy if you're not going to take responsibility for the poor one.
And Meg says, building bridges. Good morning, panel. We listen to your broadcast daily, so key to keeping us informed in real time. Oh, I see. So key to keeping us informed in real time. My question, how can we help build bridges to Trump supporters who are ready for someone new but who are worried about voting for any Democrat? Meg in Gilliland. Well, I think part of the explanation for how well Biden is doing answers that question, right? Because he's the more moderate of the two and more, would be more open to some of the independent and reasonable Republicans.
We know it's interesting how this virus and campaigns are integrating now, because one of the things that we've traditionally relied on to bring information to voters and to try to persuade voters is large gatherings of people. I mean, we're a very ritualistic society, and we tend to come together when we don't know what to do, and we look to others for guidance. And now that we're beginning to be denied that ability to do that, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays on things like campaigns and everything else in life.
And we should take a hard look at what's happening in places like Italy, where even things like sporting events the soccer matches that are so key to the regional identities are stopping. I mean, and basically you're seeing a total hold on life as we know it. And particularly, if you're Italian, it's going to be multiple weeks before you're looking at getting back to normal.
Well, it's key to just mankind's health, mental health. We go to houses of worship to try to sort of reconnect with people in our soul. We go to the movie theater just for pure entertainment and to escape. We go to all kinds of events where we just want to be around other people to make us feel better. And to not have that is a very terrifying thought.
Yeah, I mean, even something as simple as the St. Patrick's Day parade in Boston being canceled, that's a huge event in that community.
Well, right outside the door here.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, Carolyn says, virus-driven college closings. In WAMC's listening area, Smith College, Northampton, and Amherst College have both announced they are going to, quote, remote learning after spring break. Essentially, they are sending all students home from campuses with no virus cases to communities which may be infected already, and in capital letters, not letting them come back for the rest of the semester. Caroline in Ulster County.
Yeah, I think it's a challenge for all college campuses right now, because, I mean, one of the worst things you could start to look at, though, is that if you do start to see an outbreak within the college community, that it's going to spread absolutely like crazy.
The flu season is a chore every year anyway. And this is spreads in the same way. So.
And not only that, you got to figure that college president, all of those college presidents are sitting there and playing the playing the blame game. In other words, where do I do better? If I leave them here and what Rosemary just said happens, I'm going to get the blame, probably get fired. So goodbye, everybody.
The other piece that I think is interesting, Alan, and I appreciate the letter writer, you know, the private colleges actually don't have the same constraints as public colleges. You know, public colleges, you're state employees, and there's another set of rules and regulations. That doesn't mean that what's going on at UMass is different than, I mean, the thinking is going to be very, very similar. But I'm sure the chancellor in Massachusetts, like the chancellor here in New York, is looking at what they have to do for the system. And it's sometimes the systems move just a little bit slower than the private schools.
I see. And Christian says, panel, young voter. As a young voter myself, 25 years old, I'm going to give you a little perspective on our view. Some of us don't want to go out and vote early just in case the candidate drops out because we feel like our vote has been lost. Therefore, we are waiting for the last two candidates to appear, and then we will come out. That is why, in my opinion, we are not turning out to vote as early as you hope.
Well, I mean, my response to that is sort of scratching my head. Is that
civics lesson?
You know, you should vote in every election, and it's a point in time. But you know, part of our responsibility to each other is to go and vote. I mean, that's sure. The representative, the republic that we live in. So waiting doesn't help you. I mean, it's not like you can store it and pull it out later.
Doesn't help anybody except Trump.
Frank says debates.
We only have – actually going to hold you there?
Sure, of course.
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll get to that letter and many others. We welcome yours as well, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Bob Griffin, Chris Churchill, and Rosemary Armeo. We will continue after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us, and we welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org. We only who sighed? Deep sigh from somebody. Who sighed?
It was Terry.
Okay.
It was,
I didn't realize we were on
there. That's all right. I have about 15 minutes, Terry.
I was recuperating from the discussion we were having off the air about Confederate flags. I was like, oh.
Responding to his anti-Florida emails. So that was
rally
was
a little bit there, Terry.
Let's
you got
go.
15
let's go.
Minutes to
Ready.
Go.
Yeah.
All right. Alan's got letters. Go ahead.
Okay. Frank says, debates. Earlier, Rosemary said that Bernie was a better debater than Biden, and that went unchallenged. How does the panel expect the eventual Biden-Trump debates to go? Sounds entertaining, at least. And that's from Frank in New Jersey, who writes us a lot.
Yeah. Why would we?
Does anyone dare challenge me on that?
No, I
don't. Okay.
I think Rosemary was right. That's why I didn't challenge her. I don't know. I can't speak for everybody here, but I think Bernie is a better debater. I think Biden is a pretty lousy debater. But that's only one skill. I mean, I think we probably put too much emphasis on debates. It's just one minor skill in all the skills that a president is supposed to have.
So, Chris, let me disagree with you for a change.
No. I will not allow that to happen.
But think about this for a second. What is it that people are electing Biden for? They like his calmness, and they think he's going to bring some dignity back to this. You can raise all of the little tiny things that you keep raising about Biden's history and his past, but in fact, that's why Biden is winning right now. In a debate in which Bernie goes, and you know he's a very good debater, as many people here have said, but quite often it's yeah, you know, it's pretty predictable as to how he's going to do it, and you'll have the Biden calm. And that is what is helping Biden so far against Bernie.
You haven't seen the calm. You've seen his stuttering.
I haven't seen him, yeah. Biden
What's
hasn't
wrong
seen
with stuttering?
I don't mean the stutter, the physical disability. I mean the halting, the stammering, the thing that comes when you don't quite know what to say. He's so clearly uncomfortable. Bernie could like just keep going forever.
Because it's the same record. It's the same thing
and
over again.
But first of all, you're viewing these debates as someone who watches every one. It's good when candidates stay on message and drive home their points. It's bad when candidates wander off into the distance and tell you about record players and whatnot. Which Biden has done a few times.
Let me tell you about my record player.
I don't think Bernie is some outstanding debater. If Biden were going up against Elizabeth Warren on Sunday, I think he'd be shaking in his loafers.
If Schmiff.
Well, I know. if Schmidt. But I'm just saying, I don't think Bernie is some master.
I think one of the weaknesses. One of the weaknesses of our system, though, and as someone who loves to watch Prime Minister time.
Me
could
too.
Could you imagine having the president have to get up and defend policies?
Well, that's not part of our culture.
I know, but boy, I'll tell you what, that would be must-watch TV. I'd have so much fun with that right now.
You know, that's true, and it certainly is true with Trump, but can you imagine if George W. had to do that before? That would have been extraordinary.
Yes.
That would have been terrible, because that guy was not that...
It would have been hugely entertaining. I think you say terrible, and I say hugely entertaining.
And unlike his father, right? Father? Yeah.
Yeah.
He won twice, and the father, who was a more decent guy, won once.
Yeah.
I mean, among the interesting quirks of this campaign is the fact that Biden kind of benefited from Bloomberg being on the stage in those two debates when Bloomberg showed up, because it took a lot of the focus off Biden. Biden was able to kind of recede into the background a little bit.
So what are you saying here?
I'm saying that Biden was not the center of attention. When Biden was the front runner...
Same for Bernie, though.
Right. It's true for a lot of front runners. But when Biden was the center of attention, he didn't do so well. When he was able to be kind of, you know, a side player, and we haven't had a debate since. And that's why Sunday, I think, is really important for Biden. He's got to be able to show that he can do this as a front runner.
Actually, what he's saying is that Biden found somebody who debated worse than he did, so
exactly.
He looked really good.
Right. Biden was considered done at that point. Yeah. The attention was on Bloomberg, who was the rising star, mm-hmm. and then Elizabeth Warren carved him up, and that was all over.
The piñata.
Garrett says, let her. You guys may be correct. The debate may not change much, but it will most likely show he's borderline, if not fully senile. Bernie's mental health is much, capital letters, sharper than Joe. Come on.
Okay, but what about his physical health?
Come on.
Oh, 278, 77, 70. Biden has a lot of the same physical problems. He also has heart trouble.
Yes.
Right? So, I mean.
He does?
Yeah. Yes, he does.
Charlie says, Chris Churchill is a genius.
If I were you, I'd just end it right there, Chris.
I'm going to walk out of the room right now.
I agree with his level-headed observations regarding Sanders, and that's Charlie in Bennington, Vermont.
Yes, Charlie, we all say that about Chris when he's not here.
No, Chris helps a great deal. Oh, here's a better letter. John Uh-oh. Says, Alan is right.
Oh, that is a bad letter.
as Alan just implied, and as Libby keeps saying, the U.S. is a center-right country. Bernie supporters, you need to face this fact. And yeah, it stinks, but it's a reality. A majority of the U.S. thinks we're extremists, and you can't change that reality by denying it and turning on our allies.
I'm going to push back on that. If you look at polling data, This country is economically liberal and socially conservative. It's not a center right. That may be why Bernie had more success in 2016 than he's having now, because he was economically liberal then and more socially conservative on issues like guns and immigration. And he's moved left on the social issue side of things, and he's not doing as well. So it's just to say that it's center right. I think that. It's more complicated than that.
I don't think, Chris, that's why he's not doing well. I think he's not doing well right now because this country is ready for healing and ready for dignity and thinks that Biden is the one, even if you can bring
Well, you
up
might be thing. Right. Yeah. I'm sure that that's part of it. Yeah. I'm sure that's part of it.
And Ricky says, Trump supporters. Hi, panel. How many people from outside the southern states, most of whom just happen to be Trump supporters, travel to those states? In my opinion, not many. Those people seem to be rather isolated from the virus. So maybe that's who Trump is talking about when he says it's a Democratic hoax. Thanks.
No, I mean, the virus doesn't pay attention to socioeconomic condition. It doesn't pay attention to how powerful you are. It doesn't pay attention to what God you worship or how you worship it. It doesn't matter where you live. It's going to be in every single state, and it's going to affect communities the same regardless, because we're all people. So I wouldn't start to divide the country that way.
Except, I hate to argue with you on the side that I agree with. Nevertheless, as you go further south, it gets warmer. And if what we are hearing about the virus is true, that temperature has something to do with your receptiveness to the virus. Maybe there's a point here.
I strongly question whether this is seasonal. In fact, I think part of the concern I have about this whole outbreak is that this isn't going to be done in a couple of days like a snowstorm. And I think planning at universities and even K-12 is that you've got to think about this actually going into the fall.
Well, you, sir, are the expert, and I defer to you. How's that?
Thank you.
Joyce, teenagers who are in families who are for Trump. Hello, panel. You have not mentioned the point that many younger voters come from families who are ardent Trumpers, and they almost always have no choice but to vote for Trump. And one of the things I'm interested in this letter, and I don't know if it means anything, Joe.
Yes.
But from families who are ardent Trumpers. And the ardent is capitalized.
I'm not sure what they mean by they have no choice. Yeah, I mean, when you go into the voting booth, unless your parents are there with you, watching what you do, you do have a choice, right? That's the whole idea of voting.
Defy your parents.
So you can vote the way you want, and well, your parents will never know.
Unless it's like the old Albany Democratic machine where they used to make sure that you were voting for the right guy.
Have things changed? I remember it used to be that teenagers were always doing things their parents didn't know about.
Right.
Is something changed? I mean, why can't voting be the
same
way?
Come on. You know, in the sixth grade, it was Eisenhower versus Stevenson.
But sixth graders can't vote.
And I came home and said, I'm voting for Ike. He got us through World War II to my mother. And she said, no, dear, we are Democrats. And that's when I learned what I was.
But you still had to go in the box and decide to pull that lever.
But he was in sixth grade. That's the problem. So.
And Lisa says, oi. The only thing...
Sounds appropriate.
The only thing we should be worried about at this point is Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden debate. That must not happen. This is a man who can't even remember what race he's running in. Or tells the difference between his sister and his wife.
This is garbage.
This is garbage. Okay, Lisa.
Well, if you're saying the debate can't happen because of that, then that's not a very extreme. I mean, then he should be the nominee? I don't understand that.
Yeah. Forget about all those people who voted for him. Yeah. Jay, really good points made. I really like the point that was made that even if Sanders doesn't win the nomination and Biden ends up getting the presidency, that we shouldn't stop lobbying our officials for the progressive ideas like single-payer health care systems and a solution to debt and college loan problems. I think there's a lot of doom and gloom made that we won't have any forward movement if Sanders doesn't get the nomination. More progress is made in the House and Senate than anything that the president can ever do. The listeners, make sure to write your elected officials at least once a month telling them what you'd like to have happen, and that's Jay from Polktown, Poughkeepsie.
Alan, going quickly back to the letter before about the debates, no matter who it is, whether it's Sanders-Biden, whether it's Biden-Trump, whether it's Trump-Sanders, they're all going to be really bad reruns of the Golden Girls, right? I mean, it's not like there's anybody peppy and
there's
young
such a
on
thing
stage.
As bad Lance reruns of the Golden Girls?
Yeah,
yes,
was
yes,
peppy.
Yes, yes. But I mean, let's be serious. I mean,
which one is Blanche? Is that Biden or Trump?
We can fill those in, and yes.
Yeah, it was more like the Rue McClanahan of the group. Forget that. Who's B. Arthur?
Yeah.
Reed says stability.
Good morning,
panel. I voted for the first time I became eligible in 08 and have every year since. I then watched as the people who dragged this country into endless wars on false pretenses, along with the ones who gambled working class Americans' retirements away, were not held accountable for their transgressions, all for the sake of, quote, stability and bipartisanship. For all the good the Obama administration did, the declination to take on those who hold the levers of power are why we're in this mess. I hope Biden can win.
Well, just going back to that letter, but the previous letter, too, I just want to remind everyone that we're not just voting for president this time around. There are a lot of other things that we're voting for. Senate, Congress, state seats, judges, all kinds of things. And it's that collective part of our democracy that really actually gets things done. And people have to get involved, and they have to pay attention, and they have to take responsibility for making their government change if they want change.
All right.
Hi, panel. My 19-year-old son was so excited about Bernie, and last time night made him feel hopeless. This is a real problem for Biden. Of course, I will make sure my son votes on Election Day, but not every student will have someone pushing them to vote. Thanks from Tom.
Good point.
Yeah, that's sad.
And then Mike, who is a reluctant Biden supporter. I'm a family physician, single payer. Universal health care is the issue I feel strongest about. I also, Bernie's policies regarding income inequality and climate change. There's a word missing here somewhere. However, I am a pragmatic Biden supporter because my gut tells me he has a better chance of attracting independents and moderate Republicans and helping to win down ballot Senate races. Biden needs to show an interest in these issues. You know, Terry, I truly think that the Senate is really in play this time.
Yeah,
and the numbers are kind of interesting. And if the Democrats are as worked up as I think they are and as angry about Trump as they think they are, it may mean that the Democrats can take the Senate.
How is McConnell doing?
It was theoretically close, but I don't believe it.
We'll see. I mean, again, I think there's a lot of changes and twists that are going to go on with election, given what's happening with the corona and other issues in the economy. So I think there's a lot to be played.
All right, we have 2 minutes.
Drew writes, the women. Watch Senator Warren's campaign video. She's always running and dancing. She's healthier than Bernie, Biden, and Trump combined. Go back and watch AOC in Congressional Investigation. She's phenomenal. And what can I say about Rosemary other than I love her? She's fantastic, and it's not just not the same when she's not there.
Much better than that last letter.
And then says,
thank you.
One last sentence, very important sentence. You fellows are good, too. Just kidding.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm a little disappointed in my kids because you obviously need to send letters in here saying I'm doing a good job, guys. Come on now.
Hey.
Yeah, really. I have no relationship to Charlie whatsoever, and I'm sticking to that. All right.
Chris's cousin Charlie and co-host, he's wonderful.
Okay, we're out of time. My thanks to everybody. Thank you for a great morning, and we appreciate all your input. We'll be back tomorrow for another round.